Greetings, listeners and viewers. This is Ron Stefanski, host of Disrupt Ed, where we untangle this ginormously disrupted world, what we like to describe as the 5G wired, workforce augmented, technology interconnected, globally interdependent, pandemic interrupted, AI accelerated, and just wow, ginormously disrupted world of work and learning. And so in lessons, in episodes past, we've had the opportunity and the good fortune to talk to several people about the disruption going on in our food supply industry. And as we all know, parts of it are majorly broken. Our food supply has been overtaken by big agri companies, and with incentives that are aligned to producing corn and other things, we don't have control of our food system as we once did. Well, in these scary times, Mr. Rogers from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood used to always say, in scary times, look for the helpers. And so we're going to look to a faraway place from me here in downtown Detroit, and we're going to go out to Helena, Montana, the capital of Montana, to speak with a gentleman who started out his life in on a family ranch and was asked before he committed to lifelong employment with the firm to go out for 5 years and discover himself and then come back knowing full well that ranching is what he wanted to do. So Cole Mannix, the founder of the Old Salt Co-op, did just that, and he pursued a degree in theology and philosophy, and he came back thinking differently about the land and about our role as farmers, as ranchers, and as others, making the food supply more stable, more healthy, and more safe. And so, Cole, welcome to the show today. I'm excited to talk about what you're doing there. It's really pretty cool.
Thanks for having me on, Ron.
Yeah. As I said off camera, you know, I have never been cool. I've always been cool adjacent, though. I can get cool people to talk with me. So I'm really fascinated by what you're doing. You started out in a role that's so far from many of us who are urban dwellers, and you started out on a ranch, and part of your family's long history of ranching out in Montana. So tell us a little bit about your origin story and how you ultimately came to decide that you were going to launch the Old Salt Co-op.
Yeah, well, as you said, I grew up on a family ranch in the Helmville Valley, the Blackfoot Valley. So Norman McLean wrote about that valley, and the river runs through it. If you think of Montana, there's Glacier Park up at the top. Right beneath that is the Bob Marshall Wilderness, and then our family's ranch is directly south of that. So it's a beautiful little place, but very small. No store, one bar. I was the only kid in my K through 8th class. I graduated as the only 8th grader, so fairly sheltered.
Yeah.
And I studied biology. I didn't have a real career path in mind. I was just inquisitive. The ranch required, I loved the ranch, thought maybe I'd follow in Dad's footsteps. And Dad ranched with his two siblings and their spouses, and I was the oldest of the fifth generation. 1880s was when one part of the family got there, 1860s is when another part. So as the oldest of the fifth generation, they were kind of experimenting, and they decided that after college, you'd need to go away for at least 5 years if you wanted to come back and ranch. And so as I mentioned, I studied biology and then later philosophy and theology without really a career in mind. I wound up doing a master's degree in Boston, and one of the things I encountered right away was some friends saying, didn't you know that livestock are problematic for climate? Didn't you know that meat is problematic for health? And, one of the things that I had been taught growing up is to be self-critical and to know mm-hmm. that you're gonna have bias. And so I sort of dove in at first. I was interested, is that true? And at the same time, I was learning about the ecological crisis. Mm-hmm. We faced some big challenges. And I was also learning about just so many of these other challenges, maybe in my parents' generations, it would have been weapons of mass destruction. And now it's things like, exponential technology. If people can synthesize bioweapons in their garage, oh my God, like what does that mean for, you know, for the future of our living together? And, you know, how do you have exponential economic growth on a finite ecological rock? And, you know, how are you going to feed those people? And I started to just, you know, I guess being so sheltered and growing up in Helmville, I started to see a little bit more of the world. And also ask myself the question, is ranching and our livestock and is meat, are those a legitimate part of the food system? And I came to basically just realize that that answer is complex. There's definitely forms of livestock agriculture that are problematic. But I also came to believe that livestock can actually be a tremendously, they can to biomimicry. They can be a tremendous part of an ecosystem. And in fact, ecosystems that know, that used to and evolved with livestock impact that have it taken away can desertify really quickly. And so you can use livestock to basically mimic the way that wild herds of ungulates used to use the landscape, and at the same time produce incredibly nourishing human food. And it's really the question of, does the food system have, as a whole, support excellent stewardship of land? And in the world of ranching, that would be excellent use of livestock on the landscape. And I became really passionate about ranching, and just, I had grown up in it, but only begun to see it from a new context. I think in its best iteration, ranching can be productive of food, and not just any food, but really nourishing human food. And at the same time, there's not too many things that can leave so much space for wild things. Grizzly bears, wolves, migratory birds, big landscapes intact like ranching can. So it's kind of a have your cake and eat it too situation. And that's like in the best case scenarios, that's why ranching matters. And so that led me ultimately to form a meat company. We could talk more about that.
Yeah, you know, what's fascinating about your origin story is that, like many people who I've met that have come from farms or have come from ranching, there's almost a sacred outlook about the land and how we're there to be, not there to exploit it or to leverage it or to get the maximum out of it. We're really there to figure out how to live in harmony with it and how it can support our needs, but we have to support its needs to be re-nourished and replenished, or we're going to be on a barren wasteland when this is all said and done. I mean, that's kind of what you're suggesting, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, we've been taken from the land, mostly taking, and not given near enough back. And so if we're going to at least maintain our soil health, and possibly in the best cases scenario, improve it, if we're going to at least maintain our clean water, if we're going to maintain the habitat and the other wild critters that are part of that ecosystem's health and part of our ability to be agriculturally productive, I think regenerative agriculture aspires to improve fertility over time, even while being productive. And we do have examples of that. But at the very least, we need to learn to maintain that fertility and at the same time be agriculturally productive. And so it's exciting to know that that's possible, but it's definitely not the majority. I mean, I think across the country, probably across the globe, by and large, we are extracting still. And so we've got to remake our relationship with that living system. And it's hopeful to know it's possible, but now we got to get to work.
Right. It sounds very optimistic. And at the same time, you know, you've taken a couple of swipes at this, some which have you've shared in your journey have not been successful. You've looked at the food supply chain from various, you know, perspectives, from the, you know, from those that dress the animal and package the animal, from those who source and sell ultimately the product, that all those different aspects of the supply chain can be disrupted at any point or hinder what you're really talking about is ideal state, which is a land that's being nurtured and replenished and a food supply that's nourishing and not dangerous and not chemically treated for us. And so you, after trying a few things, you came upon this idea to start a fully integrated operation. And that's what you developed with Old Salt. So can you talk a little bit about how you're starting from the earth and moving to our plates?
Yeah, so Old Salt, there's kind of two major things that I think are important about it. One is that you're not going to rebuild a food system that can be regenerative of habitat unless we direct more of the food dollar back to the producer. And that's because regenerative agriculture isn't a magic technology. It is the talent and the time and the commitment to manage complex ecosystems well. That takes people. It takes young people aspiring to that and training themselves and cultivating themselves to become an excellent steward of land. And, you know, it's not just like you're managing a park. It's you've got to be productive and at the same time, you know, increase that fertility over time. And so we've got, of any food system that doesn't direct more of the food dollar, a better share of the food dollar back to the producer, cannot adequately support stewardship. And so Old Salt is a vertically integrated meat company that where the producer owns a share, not they sell the livestock to our company, but they own the share, a portion of the processing that we do. They own a share in the upside of the restaurants. We have two restaurants now. They own a share of the brand itself. We do agritourism and a festival and events, and they own a share of that as well. And if we're successful, one of the ways that Old Salt is different is that we'll return more value to the producer than if they were just part of the commodity system. And the other way that we're different is just that right now, 99% of the livestock raised in Montana, for example, as a calf or as a yearling, they're sold to the Midwest where they're fed out by somebody else on concentrated feed grains. And then they're purchased by a highly consolidated packing industry. And then a highly consolidated distributors buy it from the packer, and then they sell it to highly consolidated retailers. And so the other part of the system that makes the other part of Old Salt that's really important to me is that we can see every part of the supply chain. And we can represent each part of that supply chain from the way the soil was managed to the way the butchers were treated in the plant to ultimately to getting it to the customer. I can represent that that whole system has integrity.
I think that's a big part of it. You know, when I think about it, I remember over the last decade, we've seen a couple of shows out there that have tried to expose the food industry, and they showed us just how dangerous, for example, the ground beef industry is, that you're getting ground beef in many cases from different animals, and that's not really healthy, and that's not really safe. And so you're forced to absolutely cook the bejesus out of it just to make sure that it's edible, right? And so what you're saying makes a lot of sense. I think at the same time, you know, there are a lot of people that get exploited within the production of food, whether or not it's in a factory that's processing or it's someone on a ranch that's not being paid enough. And I think your point's an interesting one. What you're basically saying, as I understand it, is that if you really want to restore the land, you're going to need all hands on deck and you're going to need more labor to do that. And there's a lot more to it than just simply getting your livestock up and running and then ready for market.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose if you want to have talented people in any sector, you're gonna have to deliver enough quality of life to that person that it's gonna attract them. And I don't think anybody should enter agriculture aspiring to be wealthy. It's probably not the place to be truly wealthy, but it is a place that can be a rich life. And so talented people, if you want talented people managing your ecosystems, you're gonna have to be able to deliver that quality of life and that stability. And our food system has not done that. It's basically
the talent gets squeezed out. Right. And we're all victims of it. We're all eating unhealthy food. You know, the United States is one of the most obese nations. We have obesity off the charts and all the attendant health issues that come with it. So what you're talking about is really exciting because I think you have parceled out various places where the supply chain is basically broken. And, you know, what I'm really fascinated about are the economic incentives that you've produced in your integrated system where more people are going to share in the profits. I think that's I think that's an extraordinarily disruptive way to look at the food supply chain. Now, in this vertically integrated system, Cole. You've also recently opened several restaurants, right? So tell us about those.
The first one we did was called the Old Salt Outpost, and it's in downtown Helena. It's been open about 2.5 years now. And it's a super simple menu. It's a burger joint, but we've taken all the seed oils out, and we've replaced them back with animal fats. And so the potatoes are fried in beef tallow that we render. The burgers are all from our own supply chain, that from our ranches, and that we processed. And it's, you know, it's a fast casual concept. So there's a salad on the menu. Most people put a ground beef patty on that salad just to make it just right. And that was, anyway, it's been going for 2.5 years, a very simple menu, but all the potatoes come from Montana. The buns are from a company called Wheat Montana. And so it's trying to highlight the products of the Montana landscape. And then the next thing we did was just 2 weeks ago now, we opened The Union, which is a butcher shop and a wood-fired grill, kind of a combination concept. The butcher shop's open from the morning until the evening, and then the restaurant opens at 5 p.m. We cook on applewood from the Yakima, Washington area. And the whole menu is designed to move the whole animal. So we move about four beef carcasses a week. We move a couple hog carcasses a week and a couple lamb carcasses a week. And so we cycle through all of the different cuts and the parts and the pieces. And it's a way for, it's crazy. I mean, in Montana, where livestock outnumber people by far, of all the meat that is eaten in this state, less than 2% of it was raised and processed here. That's how kind of far flung and spread out and consolidated.
That's so crazy.
So Montanans think it's crazy that we can, that this entire restaurant menu is based, you know, in the landscape that they know.
Right. Now, in addition to that, you've also created an event platform with the festival. You want to talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, Old Salt Festival is held on my family's ranch in the Blackfoot Valley. So it's in the, you know, like I said, there's one store, and that's the bar. And yet last year we had 1,600 people, and there's glamping, and there's car camping, and there's RV camping, and then some people will drive in for the day from Missoula or from Helena. And it's 3 days long, and it's centered around wood-fired cooking, outdoor cooking of food. And so three renowned chef teams, one from the Portland area, one from the Bozeman, Montana area, and one from Maryland. That's a team called Woodbury Kitchen out of Baltimore, and Black Sauce Kitchen. They're bringing blue crab and oysters to do kind of a Chesapeake style mashup with our Montana meats.
I actually know that restaurant. One of my best friends is in Baltimore, and that's a great outfit.
Spike Jurdy and his team, and I'm really excited for them to come out. And so it's really, the center of it is 3 days of these tapas, kind of a series of bites, four series each day. And people are just gathered around these cinder block fires, and we've got like iron domes that are hanging beef primals. And they're just interacting with the chef teams and grazing from the fire all day long. And then there's 18 bands. For 3 days, we have a big tent where we have basically content surrounding wildlife conservation efforts across the West, examples of regenerative agriculture. Basically, funders are meeting their next project. Projects are meeting their next funder. We've got poets and authors on fly fishing and on the topics of things like outfitting and mule packing. We've got iron forging demos. We've got a big tent we call the general store, where artisans are making things out of leather and wool, and they're making knives. And a bunch of nonprofits like the Wilderness Society and the Nature Conservancy are speaking on some of the projects they're proudest of. And we have pasture walks. So it's just it's a festival about the culture of regenerative agriculture. How can we get more connected to each other, less polarized, more connected to the land that we really depend on in common? And there's no better way to diffuse polarization than to have food together and music together. That's kind of brought us together for a long time.
I love that idea. You know, we live in very polarizing times, and part of the Disrupted podcast and community is all about retaking our airways. And that means getting people that are seemingly ordinary out there that are doing extraordinary things. And Old Salt Co-op falls right down the fairway of that. I mean, you're bringing community together. You're engaging people. You're also getting some of your biggest critics, you know, in the Nature Conservancy and other places who, you know, have taken a very dim view of some aspects of livestock raising and livestock in the food system. And you're bringing them in as partners to say, hey, how do we make this a healthier proposition, a safer proposition, and one that stewards the resources of the earth a lot better? So I think that combination to me is a really powerful sign. You know, at the same time, you have to make this a going concern. And you have to make this a profitable business for you and your family and your stakeholders. And so you've been at this for 3 years. Are there signs of hope that a model like this can be self-sustaining and that you can bring this out? I mean, it would seem to me that anyone that's a fan of Old Salt Co-op is going to be rooting for you to make money. So as much so to just say, wow, this model can work for a lot of people.
Yeah, like I said, I think that... if you want to get wealthy and build a business and flip it, agriculture might not be for you. And yet after 3 years, and we've raised millions of dollars and we've taken out millions of dollars of loans, this year, it looks like we will see the black. And, I'm not going to return investors 20% on their money, but I think I can return them 10. And, we built a good network of kind of high net worth individuals who want to see this kind of change in their community. They want to see unique restaurants downtown and more life on Main Street. They want to see more life on the landscape, more diversified operations. They want to see wildlife habitat. It's cool to know, like, it can work. I think we want to remain at a scale where we can stay. We need to be at a big enough scale to pay the loans back and to experience some efficiencies and deliver food to people at a fair price. But we don't want to get so big that we lose the intimacy that people can have with their food supply. And there is probably a scale there where if we continue to work, there's a scale there where we might say, you know, that's enough growth. We're kind of in a sweet spot for the size. And our customers can still know us and we can still know our customers. And maybe the next stage of growth is that we go help another little regional hub, medium-sized, vertically integrated, connect with producers in their region. Because I think that connection to the surrounding landscape, I think that part really matters.
It really does.
You get big enough, and you begin to lose the magic.
Right, and it seems to me like you're really developing as much as a business. You're really developing a playbook for others to follow. You know, because if other people can see that, wow, it's possible to do all the things you want to produce food and everything else. And the only thing you've taken out of the equation is, you know, you're not going to be filthy rich as a process. But I like your analogy, or I like your comparison. You're not going to be wealthy, but you're going to live a rich life. And I think that's a really important consideration. And I think, you know, when I think about all the people out there in this disrupted world that are hanging on by a thread to their mental health because they're anxious about so many things going around. And what's going to solve that over the long run? What's going to solve it is getting back together as humans, getting back together as small communities, and making things work and hearing about differences and sorting those out in civil ways toward the betterment of everyone. And I think, you know, this is a very, very promising concept in a very promising and entirely disrupted, field for us. So for those of you listening with admiration and awe about this, we've been talking with Cole Mannix, the CEO and founder of Old Salt Co-op. Now, Cole, before you head off and provide your last thoughts, I got to have the dates of this festival because I think I may be getting plane tickets to Helena to join you out there. I mean, this sounds really cool. And as I said, I'm never a cool person, but I'm cool adjacent. So I just feel like I have to be part of this thing.
I think you'll make Helmville cooler by being there. And I would love to have you.
Well, thank you very much for that.
June 21st through the 23rd. It's right on the solstice. And it's probably the best time of year you could possibly see that little valley. It's going to be popping Our growing season happens late, but when it happens, it's gorgeous. And I would just say that I think the New York Times is coming out with an article here in a couple of weeks, and so we're starting to get on people's radar. And I think that my closing thoughts, Ron, would just be that it's really, like you said earlier, I think we're super wealthy. And it won't show up in the dollars so much. It does have to work economically. But I think that if you visit the ranches that are part of Old Salt, what you will see is a thriving habitat. And the people that are, you know, managing these lands, they've got to make a living, but they live in it because it's beautiful and because it's a good life. And the people that eat there, I think the people that buy from Old Salt and buy our meats, like, they're looking for that same good life. It's more than dollars and cents. It has to include those dollars and cents. But weirdly enough, a lot of the folks that are ranching within Old Salt and even in the Nature Conservancy in Montana, they're learning that actually livestock agriculture can be a tool to restore habitat and keep habitat open for the things that they had started out caring about, which is like migratory bird habitat and grizzly bear habitat and wolves. So one of my, the closing thought is that a mentor of mine who is a ranch manager named James Rogers, he used to say that the goal is more heartbeats per acre. And I really believe that. More life all around us is a richer way to live.
I love that. That's a great way to close this out. So you've been listening to Cole Maddox, the CEO and founder of Old Salt Co-op. You've heard about the festival coming up in June in Montana. Well worth your time and interest. Thank you for joining us. Cole, thank you for being here and sharing this incredibly, just exciting opportunity that you're unfolding here and that you're developing here. So we'd like to hear more about it when after the festival, so we'll have to invite you back here. But in the meantime, we're going to ask our listeners and viewers, get disrupted with us. Give us your feedback. Share your comments about the work that Cole and his team are doing. And share it on LinkedIn. Share our posts and our podcast with your friends. This is a really worthwhile venture, and thank you so much for sharing it with us today, Cole. It's been great talking with you.
Thanks for having me on, Ron.
All right. Until the next time, this has been Disrupt Ed.